deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 197. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, I have some meatballs, talk about stuff the Guardians did this week in baseball. Is Aaron Civale fixed? Is this it now? Is he back to being one of the Guardians' mainstay pitchers? Can the Guardians really win the AL Central? They're leading it right now over the Twins and White Sox. Can they maintain that to the end of the year? And just talk about how kind of surprising that is compared to where they were to start the year and prior to the year. And we'll talk about if Jose Ramirez, I don't want to phrase it as if he's terrible or bad or not great in any way, but if he's not the only one who carries the team, who else can we rely on in going forward? And we might have found out our answer in the first half of one of the doubleheaders on Monday, but we will talk about that at length. Joining me for that morning is Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Well, that's good.
Not having a podcast next week because I make terrible decisions and going to
and
Florida.
I'm going out of town too, so you know you'll have more fun than I will. So you know, small wins, I guess.
Do you get to hug Mickey where you're going? Is that a thing you get to do?
No, I have to go and schmooze with business types instead. It's definitely something I'm looking forward to.
What if you call them Mickey and hug them? Well, they can't. It's fine, right?
Can't turn me down then. Then they'll buy my software. We'll find out. Find out next time. Yeah. So
is Merritt going to prison? You know what else can buy your software, Merritt?
What? I wish.
How much would Meatball pay for software? I don't even know if that's a thing. But anyway, this is our Meatball section, where, of course, we talk about just what the Guardians did this week. Finding one thing to drill down on, just instead of reviewing every little thing, we'll find one fun thing to talk about with the Guardians. And what's yours this week, Merritt?
I actually got two, Matt.
Oh, two whole meatballs?
Two big, tasty meatballs. I might call this one of these. The first one's more of a meatloaf, too. I could have written an article about this one, and I might still, because you know, not everyone who reads it listens, not everyone who listens reads, so, you know. So this is actually, I mean, partially because I've just been watching this damn team all year. Also, it's drawn, I was listening to a rival podcast, the Selby's Godcast, while walking to work today. And they were just talking about how this is a team that, like, you know, grinds out at bats and takes the extra base and does all the little things well. And so I spent like an hour not working today looking into, you know, I mean, is that the case? Are they really just getting a lot of their runs by going first to third more often than other teams? Sack hitting, sack bunting, sack flying, stealing bases, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I have several data points, both in the yes and no. I'll go through them very briefly for you right now, Matthew. How's that sound?
Oh, that sounds excellent, man.
Let's dive in. First in the I think so. This is kind of a grinding old school team. Yeah, definitely. This is across all baseball, all these stats. They're second in infield hits, second lowest swinging first strike percentage, and the sixth highest strikeout looking rate. So they're swinging the bat. They're putting the ball in play. They're sixth in sack bunts, which is sandwiched, funnily enough, between the White Sox and Kansas City. They're also third in sack flies between San Francisco and San Diego. The Dodgers are first. The Red Sox are fifth, which tell me one thing. Hitting a lot of sack flies, Matt, is not a direct correlation to winning a lot. They also have the lowest K rate, and they're third in baseball in stolen bases. So, having got all that information, are you feeling like this is a kind of a grinding team that kind of gets on base and causes havoc and things of that nature?
Yeah, this sounds very annoying, pain in the ass, 2015 Royalsy. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, so let's move on a little bit. All right, so they are literally... This is kind of, I guess, I don't know, whatever. This isn't really anything. This is in the middle ground. So they are literally league average at taking the extra base. Literally, it's like 42% of the time a player on average in baseball takes the extra base, goes first to third or first to home or whatever it might be, second home, something like that. They are literally dead average. Now, Amed Rosario is sixth in all of baseball at taking the extra base. But the next closest is in the mid-40s. I think Kwan and Ramirez are next to each other.
And when you say mid-40s, is that like percentage of
extra bases taken given the opportunity? The team that does it the most, I think, is the Braves at like 50%. So, you know. Now, they do have, in terms of raw numbers, they've gone first to third or home, the seventh most of any team in baseball. That's in raw numbers, not percentage numbers, though. So whatever.
Yeah.
That's interesting, right? Maybe a little bit of action, but not as much as you might think.
I wonder with those, did even the Royals have that many? Or is that like a thing that it just seems like it happens more when you're looking for it?
I think, like, I think it's the last thing, because, that's like, just looking at, where did I put it? I was looking at these stats earlier. Just looking at it earlier, it's like, it's not really a correlation to anything that I can really see, quite honestly. It's just kind of, like you said, it's just one of those things you just kind of notice, but also it's not really anything. So, in fact, let me pull it up right now.
Yeah, it's just like once the narrative builds that you're scrappy and you take
the right, exactly.
Bases, yeah. Which this team definitely has. I mean,
I agree. I mean, just looking at the other extra bases taken teams, Braves, Diamondbacks, Orioles, Athletics at the top, and then Cardinals at the top five, and then Royals would be six. So, good team, bad team, good team, bad team, good team, bad team. And it kind of alternates that way the entire way down the list. It's very interesting where it just has no correlation to really anything. I can even run this back to 2015?
Yeah, that'd be the Royals.
I'm kind of curious. I want to see it real quick. Let's see where the Royals were on that. Since we're here anyway. Since we're jib-jabbing on this.
Since we're just hanging out here on the old internet.
Yeah, we're just hanging out here on the internet.
Or from the worldwide web of data.
Extra bases taken. The Royals were fourth. 44%. Okay, so
they were pretty high. But it wasn't like blown away lead. I remember thinking, watching them, it just felt like every damn time they could take an extra base, they could. But fourth was pretty elite, I would say.
So the top five in 2015, Rangers, Rockies, Cubs, Royals, Los Angeles, Angels of Anaheim. Jesus Christ.
See, none of those were particular. I mean, I guess the Cubs at that point were starting to be good.
That was, that was their year before. Yeah, they kind of set it off. Yeah, exactly. The Rockies were, they probably went 71-91 without me looking.
just kind of what they do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Rangers were kind of dismantling, and the Angels were, I think they went to the playoffs the last time the next year. The Astros were, okay. And then so here's the last part. I don't think this really tells me anything. All right, so right now Cleveland is 24th in baseball in walk rate. They have the second lowest home run rate, which kind of tells you a different story. They don't hit a lot of home runs. I don't know. They're the third lowest in exit velocity, which is usually a good trender of getting base hits. But I think this is the most damning one. They're below league average in pitches per plate appearance at about 3.87. I think the leader was like 4.6, something like that. So they're actually taking less pitches than your average team, or experiencing less pitches per plate appearance. But they do have the highest contact rate in the majors.
Yeah, the second one makes sense. The first one is confusing.
Interesting, right? A curious thing. I'm just like, you feel like they take a ton, but then you think of who's on the team. Rosario loves to swing the bat. Naylor likes to swing the bat. And they both make a lot of contact. Jimenez likes to swing the bat. And they have a lot of rookies, too. So really, it's only Kwan, I think, who grinds out pitches. In fact, I was looking at it earlier. He's only one even in the top 20 in baseball in terms of pitches per plate appearance. So, yeah.
Yeah, because even Jose now, he's, since like the All-Star break, it's not exactly taking a ton of pitches. It's just swinging more and everything that he shouldn't be swinging at, which, I mean, we'll talk about later. But he was the other one I would think about that would grind out of bats. I don't know if he's doing it as much recently. So I guess that kind of makes sense, but it's definitely one of those things that are opposite of the perception of the team. The contact rate is definitely...
Yeah,
right on track with the way.
Right, that's just of course. But honestly, the pitches per plate appearance thing, that really surprised me. So
yeah, oh for sure. And I don't know if I didn't listen to Selby's Godcast yet, but I don't think I mentioned a tweet that like somebody was they were basically saying that the Guardians just play a bullshit brand of baseball and it's so boring. It's like, wow, we've officially become that Royals team.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Like,
I can't think of how many Cleveland fans must have said the same thing about Kansas City that year.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I had that exact thought walking down the hill. I was like, I don't know if that's true, if they really do all do it. I feel like they do, but yeah, they really are an irritating team to play.
which, I mean, that's all you need to see is other fan bases talking about it like that, and we made it. We're here.
Well, I think back to those 2 years when the Royals were good. Like, Tom Hamilton loved that team. He was unabashed about how much he loved. Like, it was so every time they play the Royals, it was just so obvious how much he loved everything they'd done, the team they put together. And he's a very old school type of guy. But I mean, absent the fact that I really hated them, I thought they were great. I thought they were a total hoot. You know, I wrote a really weird article about them, like back in the winter, so, talking about how they were like this in between team between when two eras of baseball like emerged. Yeah. So I don't know.
I definitely hated them in a baseball sense, which was fun. Like, I was glad that I could hate a team like that. There's nobody now because the Twins are collapsing. The White Sox are just a mess. Like, I can't hate them. It's
no, I can never hate the White Sox. I think they're a neat team. I mean, come on, yeah, they're making the world black and white. So anyway, what's your meatball, Matt? What do you got for me?
So my meatball is not a it's not a five-star restaurant. It's not even an Olive Garden meatball. It's just like a little frozen meatball that you didn't oven long enough. But
hey, they deserve it. Those are good.
I thought Luke Maley deserves some credit and some recognition for what he's done, I guess, since the All-Star break, all season long, really. His WRC Plus heading into Monday was up to 90, which, considering where it was earlier and where Guardians catchers have been recently, that's pretty awesome. He's got a decent eye at the plate, I think, better than, perception-wise, I think better than it looks. He has almost a 12% walk rate. He's great at not chasing pitches. And since the All-Star break, 106 WRC Plus, he's riding a six-game hitting streak going into the game. It's going on while we're recording, so maybe by the time this comes out, it'll be snapped. But he's looked like an actual hitter, which is not something we've seen out of our catchers. Although I guess recently Austin Hedges, too, has hit a little better. But
yeah,
I mean, Luke Maley's almost at the point where if Bo Naylor comes up and is ready next year and you have somebody else who also values defense like the Guardians do for catcher, I would almost rather trade Austin Hedges and get a little more and just keep Luke Maley as your backup. But, I mean, again, if the trade isn't there, like if I'm Ed Rosario, just keep Hedges. But if it is, and you can get more than you would for Luke Maley, like Bo Naylor and Luke Maley, you all of a sudden maybe have a competent-ish battering of catchers. If Austin
one
Hedges
might say above average.
Ooh, I'm not going there either. Ooh, that's I don't know if Luke Maley can stay above average that long, but he's there now at least.
I think I've moved five times since they had hit above average production at catcher.
And speaking of that one, Yan Gomes was just in he's on the Cubs now, I think.
Hey, he was here in D.C.
Yeah, and they played him a tribute. And yeah. That was like, that's very sad for me personally. Yeah. Because
that could have been our World Series.
That could have been our Yan Gomes. But yeah, I just think Luke Maley's been good recently. There's nothing specific about him. I looked and tried to see, like, he's slow and he's getting slower as he goes. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard. He's not really a great defender, but he's just kind of one of those guys, like, you just look and all of a sudden, hey, he has a few hits, and he's always slightly better than you think. Just looking at him, I think the only real thing is that he's got a decent eye at the plate, which is, again, something the Guardians like, and he's made it work so far.
Yeah, gives himself chances, grinds, just like the rest of the team. He grinds out at bats, et cetera, as we learned just a few minutes ago. Wait a minute.
Wait, hold on now. So what's your amazing, the best meatball ever in the world?
This is a pretty nice one. This is a reference literally to a game that happened today. Today, on the 15th of August, big news. Aaron Civale threw more curveballs by percentage than he ever has in his entire career.
And they were good.
And they were good also. Secondarily, they were good. He threw 43.9% of his pitches were curveballs. The next closest in his entire career is, I believe, 35.4 on October 3rd, 2021. He had a 34.7 on August 24th of 2020. He has never thrown more curveballs, and he's rarely looked as dominant as he did against the admittedly lowly Tigers.
Now, is that like, you think, a scouting report thing? Like, remember Lucas Giolito a couple years ago said he only threw changed up to the Guardians because he never adjusted. Is this like a thing where he's just looking at that Tigers lineup and just saying, oh, whatever, I'll just throw curveballs, I can't hit him?
I would think so. I mean, first of all, I was also thinking about this watching the first game today. How awful must it be to be a Tigers fan? They call up all their young prospects, and they're starting to get good now. Like, this sucks. And they look over at Cleveland, and they're just like, oh, we got another one. Here he is.
They rebuilt for half a year. Now they're back already with all the pitchers back.
You have one year where you don't. Now, they still had a winning season. They've had a non-winning season. They just rebuilt anyway. Like, yeah, well, whatever. I don't know. We got these guys. Yeah, that's right. Nine in the top 100. Pretty good, huh? We're proud of ourselves. What'd you guys do? How are you doing over there? Oh, that's bad. So.
It's just like flying by in a Corvette and they're in a broken down Jeep on the side of the road.
I will say, I think he's getting, I mean, I think that people are being more lax in looking at whatever's helping with spin rates, and that could be helping Aaron Civale because
that was one of my notes for the Google Docs sticky stuff ? Like, is this I don't want to say it's all stick, because I mean, his spin rate's always been amazing. Noted that before, like even when his baseball savant stuff, everything is just terrible because it's two bright red balls of his spin rate. So
94th percentile fastball spin, 95th percentile curveball spin. I don't know what the actual raw numbers are until I look it up, if you give me a minute. But yeah, exactly. It's just like,
but I don't know what he does. It's hard to look at two of his starts and say, like, this is what makes this one so much better than this other one. I guess just pure control, I guess. Like, we saw Tristan McKenzie so frequently when he's good, it's just purely because he knows where to put the ball and he's capable of doing it. I feel like Aaron Civale is just kind of the same thing. When I mean, we even saw it right away. Like, I messaged you that we had our answer to Aaron Civale after like two batters and then immediately had to retract it because he just turned it on like that. Like, those first two batters is what we've seen out of a lot of starts this year when he just struggles to put that curveball where he wants. But he adjusted to it now, and he just came out and, well, total of 36 curveballs, one put in play, 11 whiffs and 12 called strikes. So they were not even close to this ball at all.
I will say this. I just was glancing at his spin rate by game.
Do they jump a little bit?
Let's see. So just looking real quick, just at this year, you know, it dropped pretty precipitously, very suddenly back in 2021.
Oh, that's weird.
Very strange. We won't get into it. But anyway, so we came back July 13th. He got hurt, I think, and went on the DL or whatever it is. He was down to 2865 RPM. Last start before this one, 3037, highest spin rate in a single game ever. So, you know, I mean, what are we going to do here? Do we have spin rates on today's game? I don't think so, not yet anyway. But we'll get into that later. But who's to say, Matt? Who's to say? I mean, he's always a guy who had to live on guile and movement and, you know, as you were saying about McKenzie, location. Because he does not have the velocity, never has, and never will. I hate his fastball with passion, but you got to throw it. But
it's not a pretty fastball. It's not a.
No. I mean, it's one of those things where you got to throw it like once every other at bat, basically, and then you just continue to throw garbage at the plate. But
yeah, I mean, if you're leading off with a curveball like his was today, you can just use your fastball eventually. But yeah, it was all cutter, sinker. He doesn't use his changeup at all. Hasn't he been slowly fading it out, and now it's just nothing?
Today, yeah, he threw 82 pitches.
Zero finger changeups.
Yeah, 4.9% fastball, 18.3% sinker, 29.3% cutter, 3.7% slider, and 43.9% curve. So,
yeah, and that brings us to the overarching point of talking about Civale. Like, is he fixed now? Can we rely on him again? Which is, if we can, that's a huge thing for Cleveland. Like we were talking about, there's no way. There's no definitive third yet. I mean, you got Bieber and McKenzie are like a 1A, 1B almost at this point. And then you have...
I would say Quantrill's kind of given himself the third position at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. So then they have four, and then Plesac is just kind of dangling out on the side of the boat over there. But, I mean, if Civale's back, then you've got like four... Again, we're just back to, like you said, with the poor Tigers. We're back to having a full stable of pitchers again. Which with the way having an actual offense who's... I don't know, maybe coached by an actual hitting coach. And then now you got all four pitches back. It's quite a change. So is he actually back, you think? Or is this kind of like he's pitched against the Tigers twice? So
exactly. So like it is very hard to draw a firm conclusion. I will say that like for better or worse, he's still got more swings and misses than every other pitcher combined in his start on Monday as we record this. 18 swings and misses combined. The rest of all other pitchers had 17. So... And Karinczak obviously is. I don't know. I'm. I didn't even give it any thought, and then I was just kind of glancing at various spin rates, and then I just kind of thought maybe he's doing something there. I just remember watching a game a couple days ago. It must have been Karinczak's last before they went up to Toronto, but he was sure it was one where he went nuts and got a talking to from the umpire because he was going too crazy. He was doing a lot of like tossing the rosin bag and touching his hair, then tossing the rosin bag and tossing his hair, and it's like. I know what you're doing over there.
I see you over there.
You are making sticky stuff. What are you doing? all that to say, I mean, Civale was always, like I said before, always a razor's edge guy. His fat, like, he just didn't have the velocity to do it. And again, he's pitching against what is a really bad team. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, right as I speak, as I say this, the Tigers are winning 1-0, but they don't win a lot. They're terrible. They're very bad. And I know that's not like revelatory or anything like that, but somehow they're in last place in the division with the Kansas City Royals. So I don't know. It's hard to know until we get to see him pitch against someone else. But the thing is, like, his next start is going to be against who who's that going to be even be against? Like, with the Tigers again? I mean, hey, if they can just hold him and have him only pitch against the Tigers and Royals,
they'll be in the postseason. They'll be good. Yeah, I don't think they play the Tigers again at all this season, so I'm not sure. Okay,
so because it'd be 5 games from now. So let's see. Actually, it'd be 5 days from now. Is that a home run? It is a home run. Hell yeah, Jimenez. Sorry, while I'm watching the game, while we do that, he just hit another home run. So 2, 3, 4. It'll be against the White Sox. He's just pretty good against the White Sox. So that'll be a better test. The White Sox are also very bad of late. They're better than the Tigers, obviously. I think they have twice as many wins almost somehow. I don't know. What do you think? It's like I said, it's hard to judge off 2 starts. He's been good in 2 starts. I think we're a total of like 10 innings or something like that and shitload of strikeouts. But
yeah,
no, I liked what I saw today, and maybe he found something. I don't know. I don't think he can live off throwing nearly 50% curveballs for a long time. But against poorly disciplined teams like the White Sox and like the Tigers, that can help you. So I don't know.
I think also the curveball, just like you got to throw it that good to have it be that good. No matter who you're playing, like if he doesn't throw that curveball well.
Yeah,
and we've seen earlier this year the Tigers can hit the Guardians and still win a couple games, but yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there was a couple mistake curveballs in there that other teams might have crushed compared to the Tigers, but it's not nothing. Like 10 strikeouts against the major league teams over 6 innings is it's still something. And one of those strikeouts too was a really weird situation where the batter hit the ball twice on a it was ruled a ground ball but ended up being a foul ball, so he had to come back in, like ramp back up and then get that out, and he did that. So it's not like he just collapsed on the first sign of something weird happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. It'll. I'm excited to see him pitch against the White Sox and other pitchers down the stretch. And it's going to be a hard decision now, I think, between Quantrill and Savali for who's number three, because the first two, like you said, are already locked up.
So especially if Bieber's, as was reported on his Sunday Star, was his velocity's back up. And I will say that the thing that will help Quantrill separate himself with someone like Savali, from someone like Savali, well, specifically Savali. What a weird way to talk. Jesus.
specifically this one guy.
Yeah, specifically this one. Someone like specifically this one guy. And this is like something I know Rick Manning talks about this a lot. And guys who like to talk about pitching, like feel pitches, right? Like it's not so much that you throw it hard. It's that you need to be able to throw it in the right way. And if you don't have it that day, then you're kind of screwed. And like his changeup and curve, and even to a degree his cutter, I would think, if you want to get any movement on it, are kind of feel pitches. And again, I'm not saying like they're doing something blatantly illegal. They give them a rosin bag for a reason, to get more tackiness. And it's just, you know, over time, guys went from just spraying a whole bunch of, what do you call it, sunscreen on their arm, and then using that as a combination with the rosin to create some kind of tackiness. We just got crazy with the spider tack after a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be surprised if it's just they found a way to make that more efficient.
Well, it needs to be done. It's literally part of the game is giving the it's a safety thing, right? Like it just no one policed it, and so baseball being a game of cheaters in its entire history, I usually respect cheating as long as it's quite as blatant as with the Astros, and they just pushed it, I think they got a vote a little too far. But yeah, they figured something else out, and it was needed because otherwise it's a safety thing. So I don't know. Maybe it's been figured out that it now is back in Savali's favor. To what degree? I don't know, 3.65 ERA, right? Five or six starts per inning, or 5 or 6 innings per start, rather. And that's a good pitcher.
Okay. Yeah, and I think if this is where it gets to, like if this is as sticky as pitchers can get their pitches, like this is a good spot, I think, where you still have these pitchers who can do insane things, and it's fun to watch them, but also not everybody's getting perfect. I mean, that was almost a perfect game the other night, but not everybody's always, there's not a perfect game every other night like last year. And I think the year before even, it's in a good spot now. Just the balance of hitting and pitching, I think, is better than it's been in recent years. And you also have one player hitting a bunch of home runs, which I think this game needs a lot. Like they need Aaron Judge to chase a record more than they need everybody to hit 30 home runs.
It was yesterday, maybe today, I don't know. All my days blur together. But it was the 10th anniversary of Felix Hernandez's.
I think it was either Sunday or Saturday. It was right around because somebody else almost threw a perfect game on Sunday.
But that was the first time in 10 years. That was the last one for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And I will say, too, you know, obviously in terms of weighted on base average, offense is at the second lowest point it has been since 2006. So I don't know. I mean,
what's the lowest point? Is it last year?
2014. Do you remember that one? Yeah. That was awful. Nobody scored. Like, it was just so bad. Like, the average batting line that year, my God, Matt, 251, 314, 386. Like, just dreadful.
So I don't know how you would even – I think you can look at the top percentile of players. But I think we have more, like, individual standout hitters now instead of – does that make sense? Like, a bunch of standout hitters, but maybe more below average than a bunch of average hitters, what I think is better than having everybody raise the WOBA.
To say something, to give it a weird term, there's a stronger middle class of hitter, if that makes sense, right? Like, it's, I think to a degree that's caught up to what had become an incredibly strong middle class of pitching. And your boy Luke Maley just hit a home run. So there you go.
There we go. he did not lose his hit streak, so he made me look smart.
Thank All right. I think that the floor is up a little bit. So like you don't have a whole bunch of just I think Cleveland is as evidenced by they're moving away from Bradley and moving away from Reyes. I think there certainly is a move away from, to a degree at least, that kind of all or nothing approach. It's never going to go away because, again, Adam Dunn is one of the greatest offensive threats of the last 25 years. And what did he hit, right? He hit 250, 400, 500, like 550 or whatever it was.
Yeah, they've basically just moneyballed again. Like, they've done the exact same thing that the A's did, which was everybody wants these guys who – I mean, back then it was purely guys who had big home run numbers, but now it's been high exit velocity, and the Guardians have just scooped up everybody who
high contact
gets on base. Right. It's literally just they moneyballed again.
They found the thing that was cheap, and they went after it. And it, and I think, when was this? I can't remember what I was listening. Oh, you know what? Maybe just because I got it off Subby's Godcast again. But they were just talking about how their theory was. I don't know how much of this is true, but it was at least an interesting point. Was that so many teams have gotten so used to shifting and all this stuff, and that just maybe the level of individual defense has dropped so much. I mean, I will say Keith Hernandez, you know, the Mets announcer, he asked SNY to not put him doing Phillies games anymore because their fundamentals are so bad.
Keith Hernandez. I only saw somebody mention that. Did he actually say that, like, seriously, or was it a joke?
Yes, he doesn't want to cover them because it makes him upset. He's known as the greatest defensive third baseman of all time. And, like, I will say, watching the Phillies is just a carnival. It is, like, I remember that beginning of that season, we were all like, what are they doing? Like, worst case scenario, I guess you can just trade all these guys to be DHs elsewhere. But, like, their outfield at one point was, what, Schwarber, Castellanos, and...
Oh, God.
And Harper, awesome. I think that was their outfield.
Yeah, that's like, delicious.
It's so bad. So,
I don't know if Hernandez has done anything terrible, but just from an outside perspective, I love him as an announcer. Because I get to watch a couple Mets games, I'm in New York, and, like, all the... He's basically Rick Manning turned to 11 as far as the – he's grumpy but not in a way that's, like, angry.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of wisdom. He knows the game very well. Him and who's the other guy? Ron Darling.
Yeah.
They're really good. And then what's his name? Gary Cohn is really good as well. Yeah, they have the best booth in the majors probably.
Yeah, White Sox probably up there pretty close, but
I don't know. They're losing Benetti soon, and they're going to lose Stone apparently at the end of the year. So, and meanwhile, hey, Cleveland also has a 3-man booth, so that's something, right? It's the same.
They sure do.
Yeah, there's three guys there. Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
yeah. And so we mentioned Sobey's Godcast twice now. So legally, if TJ or Zach listen to this podcast, they have to mention us now, I think, or else.
Yeah, checkmate, fools. I got to start listening to podcasts that are about the Guardians because it really ruins my independent points.
So, yeah, I mean, the Guardians, they're building this weird team. They are what they are. And, I mean, at this point, it's looking like they could win the AL Central, which Chris Davies wrote today about it. The fact that the Guardians went from, I think Fangraphs, they, like, picked, was it the only AL team they didn't pick to make the, or the only AL Central team they didn't pick to make the postseason. Nobody on Fangraphs picked them, which I didn't think they'd win the World Series or anything here, but that kind of is insane. But they've gone from basically, they started the season third, a pretty distant way away from the White Sox and Cubs, or White Sox and Twins in terms of playoff odds, and now they're number one. They've climbed up the whole season. Chris included in his post a chart that shows the one of the Fangraphs, like, win probability, or not win probability, but postseason probability over time. And it's just, it's a beautiful chart. Watch the Guardians kind of ho-hum in May and June, and then just July, they shoot way up, and then they slow down. In August, they've just taken over the league. recently and watching like the White Sox completely collapsing on themselves. So I don't know. It seems like there's, they're going to go down again at some point. They're just not going to do this for the next 2 months. They're going to struggle again. That's fine. It is what it is. But can they do this and go through another struggle? I'm sure at some point bounce back again and go into the postseason and maybe be one of, I don't know. It's weird because they're in the AL Central. And also if they were in any other division, they're not leading a division, but they look so good in the Central right now. 8-2 in the last 10, they lost the one to the Blue Jays, but still pummeled them twice. So, yeah, how are you feeling about this team and the chances of actually pulling off, which pretty big upset compared to where they were
in the season? Oh, yeah. You got to figure there are so many unknowns with the team. I mean, I think we were all looking at the opening day roster a week or so ago and it's just like, what was this roster? It's insane. Like,
Wasn't Bobby Bradley there?
Yeah. Bradley, Reyes, like, just so many guys. Kwan was batting ninth, I think. It is unrecognizable. I mean, there's guys in the lineup now, especially tonight, because it's the second half of a doubleheader, who just you never expect to see that. So they have 62 wins, right? There's assuming they, I'm just going to be optimistic and say they win the second game of the doubleheader. They'll have 63 wins, which means they have 46 games left to play. If they just maintain their current winning percentage of 5-9, that's an additional 24 wins, which gets them to 87 wins. 88, we'll call it. We'll be optimistic again. Do you think 88 wins? That would mean Minnesota would have to win 30 more games. The White Sox would have to win 29. They both have a 5-13 winning percentage right now, which obviously would not get them there. Having said all that, because again, I think they're good. Of course I do. I'm a fan of the team, and I think they're doing real well right now, and they're starting to figure stuff out. But I don't know. I mean, can Minnesota go on a tear? Can Cleveland? Saying they only have to win 25 more games from now until the end of the season seems much more doable. That would be 25-21. Do you think they can go 25-21 over the next month and a half?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think it's, right? It's yeah. Oh, 25-21? Yeah, for sure. It's not a difficult schedule, especially in September. They play the Orioles, Mariners, Royals, Angels, Rangers, and the Rays are going to be hard at the end. But the sandwich in between there is in total, was that 8 games against the Twins. I think no matter what they do in the rest of the game, the division comes down to how they do in those 8 games.
I honestly disagree with that. I think it all comes down to the last week of the season where they play the Royals 6 games in a row.
That's true, yeah.
They also have the Rays for 3, but of those last 9 games between Minnesota and the White Sox, those two teams play each other 6 times. So I'll say this also. So if they win 25 games, that's a 5.43 winning percentage. They're basically right there right now. So they have to maintain their exact current production to win to get 88 wins and probably win the division. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, the games against the Twins are going to be important. Will the Twins be able to keep their head? I don't know. I mean, we have a couple more games before they get there, and there's definitely a chance that they could kind of continue to spiral. But
I'd love for them to continue to spiral. That'd be my peak. It's hard to climb out when your bullpen is the one screwing you. The hardest thing to overcome is,
oh, without a doubt.
Like when your offense is clicking, your starting pitch is fine, you get to the seventh inning, it just implodes every time. It cannot be a fun experience.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you even look at things just like runs allowed. Like, Cleveland has allowed 472 runs this year. Minnesota's 488, and White Sox are already 504. I mean, Detroit's only allowed 513. So the White Sox defense is an ability to keep runs off the board, I guess, is barely better than the Tigers is. So it gets one blowout away from being as bad as the Tigers.
So I have one interesting question. I'm looking at the schedule because I did not realize they'll play the Royals 6 times in a row to end the season. Three of those are reschedules. Yes. So if the Guardians somehow run away with this and they have more than a 3-game lead and no matter what, they'd be locked into, I guess that'd be the 4th seed. Do they just not play those games? Because, I mean, historically, haven't they not played a game they had to make up against the Tigers that one time and they only played 161 games?
Yeah, when they went 81 and 80. I think but both those teams were out of it, I think, at that point. Or no, actually, the Tigers would have been blowing the doors off everyone because it was 2014.
So, I mean, do they just not play them? Or does it matter?
I don't know. That's a great question.
If the seeding is locked in, do they just not? There's no reason to. Like, they just, because the playoffs started October 7th. Yeah. So if they have the option, I'm sure the Guardians would rather say, we'll just not play those games unless they want the revenue.
Who's saying that? Is it the players or is it the ownership who wants money from ticket sales?
Actually, now that I think about it, yeah. They probably want that, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's and again, is that an MLB rule? Like, if it's made up and you don't need it, do you not play it? I can't remember off the top of my head if they could have played that last game against the Tigers or if how that would have worked. But like, yeah, I think you're right. Obviously, the Guardians were out of it and the Tigers were probably destroying everybody. But now I want to know how that's going to work, because also 6 games in a row against the same team is insanity. That's basically what the minors are doing right now, where you play
a week. Those last 2 games would be so tiresome. Just like, this team again? Like, Jesus here comes Christ.
Fucking Chris Bubich. He's on the mound again.
And this is just so much bad pitching. It's going to be horrendous.
And there's a chance, like, if they clinch those last couple games, it's going to be the Royals against the hangover team for the Guardians.
For 3 games, too. Like, just all these young call-ups and stuff just out there doing their thing. Like, this is dreadful, huh? Yeah, go bad. I hate this.
I'm going to playoffs in a week. How about you? I'm going to go home.
Because that's the thing, too. Like, the Royals are having a death march of a season themselves. Like, they're a 414 winning percentage. You know, they're not going to lose 100 games or anything like that. Well, maybe.
But they traded four Andrew Benintendis like a year ago. How fucking weird was that?
That's true, yeah. And they're just, like, you know, they can't pitch. They can barely hit. They have the third. Jesus, Washington's bad. Okay, they aren't that bad either. I was looking at run differentials. Good Lord, Washington's at 210, minus 210 run differential. It's close to 160. Good Lord, that team stinks. Again, yes, I think they win the division because they, at this point, they're, as I look at the standings, while a game is happening, they are 3 games up. They're 2 games up in the loss column, which is the most important part. But also at this point, I think they're chasing 88 wins. I think 88 wins the division, and, you know, they're 4 games closer than the other 2 teams. So
I just don't want to get blown out by the Yankees again. That's all I want. I want to win a series for the first time since 2016. I'm sick of getting the playoffs and just not having it be fun. Or if they get to like 2 wins in the wild card round, I'm going to be extremely tense, because what is it like? They haven't won an elimination game since the World Series. Because remember, they won those 2 in 2017 against the Yankees and then got sank.
I remember that. Yeah, I was at my friend's wedding. It was very upsetting because my other buddy's dad's a big Yankees fan. Very upsetting. Oh, very upsetting indeed.
That's bad. Ugh, I worked with Yankees fans, so that was a bad week.
Ugh, dreadful.
Listen, yeah, we had some fun banter, and I did some bantering those first 2 games, and the banter came back.
Dude. And then you felt bad. Oh, no. What have I done here? Bantered on.
I was reaping and sowing.
I was that one tweet. Me going, oh, God.
That's that exact tweet, yeah.
I mean, just again, their performance against good teams, right? They're 30-20 against better than 500 teams. Twins and the White Sox are both worse than that. The Whites, I think they have the hardest schedule of the other 2 teams.
Do they really?
But yeah, again,
the schedule's pretty. I guess maybe it's because
it's by percentage points. It's not, but again, that cushion at the end of the year is just that's so insane that is happening.
That they get to just play that many teams at once. Yeah,
just the Royals that often, like. How can you look at that and not feel? I mean, obviously the Royals are still a team; and they're still going to maybe be competing. But again, you never know.
They're a bad team who also sold off this year, and they're just parts right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's just, there's nothing going on there. And anyone who like even guys who might be able to cause some damage, like someone like Alberto Mondesi, like even if he comes back because he's hurt, I think, right? Yeah. Even if he comes back, they're not going to play him. We're going to see a bunch of very high numbers being played. So,
Right. So our last thing for the day, just not to say that Jose Ramirez is terrible or fallen off the wagon there, but he's not looked good. Like, just going with arbitrary endpoints again, the All-Star break, going into Monday, slashing .261, .297, .424 since then, 3 home runs, 37 fly balls, 18 line drives. So everything is just going in the air. He's not hitting particularly hard. It's all medium contact according to Fangraphs, how they rank him. So it's not like you've seen it. If anybody who's watched the Guardians have seen how many balls he's just hit straight up in the air for whatever reason. The question just becomes if he's like that in the postseason and if he doesn't bounce back, and even if he does and they need just a second hitter, I mean, who is that? I think we kind of found out today, and maybe it was already pointing that direction. It might be Andrés Giménez, but is there anyone else you had in mind who is kind of the Guardians second, who is not just having Jose Ramirez carry the team on his own like he had to? I would say last year and the year before.
I mean, if we get to the postseason and it's actively October, I can only think of one man, and that's Josh Naylor.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I cannot wait to see him in an October series again. He's going to go bananas.
I love that he acknowledged it at one point. What didn't he say that against, like, who else has hit Garrett Cole like that in the postseason? It was a quote he had a couple days ago. It was great. I love that he actually
Like, he recognizes what he did. And it's like, yeah, you do, Roy, actually. And that's the thing. Like, I guess to this point, it was like, who can carry the team? I think it's nice that we're getting maybe to a point where no one person has to. Like, at this point, we have a guy who can get on base to open up a game. We have a guy behind him who if he's right, is just in fuego. If he's wrong, then it's horrible. But what are you going to do? And then behind Ramirez, you have Jimenez and you have Naylor. And then even some other guys I'm starting to believe in. I wrote last week about Oscar Gonzalez. I'm still like, maybe. I'm still on the fence about him. But I feel better every day because he could just be one of those unicorn players. I don't know what you do about Ramirez, because it's obvious because he hurt his thumb, I think. He hurt his thumb a while back, and it just seems like that's the problem. He just, like you said, any arbitrary endpoint, last 7 days, hitting 250, 296, 375. Last 2 weeks, 240, 291, 340. He's hit his first home run in like 3 weeks the other day. He doesn't have any power. He's not hitting any extra bases. He's not working the walks very well. Pressing, as you pointed out earlier. It's nice they have guys who can, pick up the slack when he can't, but they really need to figure that part out because you can't. We experienced this with the Guardians back in, what was it, 2016, having a black hole in the middle of your lineup with when Mike Napoli became nothing. It's very hard to win games. And when you don't have an elite pitcher to help you do those things and, the right amount of luck as well, it's very difficult. So I think they've built enough of a lineup that you can feel a bit more comfortable. And, again, they can cause havoc. And playoff baseball is weird anyway. So not being able to hit the home runs is going to be a big problem, because every year for the last, like, 6 or 7 years, you see the teams who hit the most home runs generally win in the postseason, because it's easy to hit home runs, right? It's easy to hit home run or easy to score runs that way. And the grinding mentality of what Cleveland does, which is, like, just be a little bit better, is much more, good in a 162-game season than in a short series. So all this to say, I think they have the guys. It's just, can he also be something resembling himself?
Yeah, this is also one of the most just well-rounded teams I think that they've had offensively in a long time.
Since 2017, honestly, I would say.
The pitching was obviously better, but
yeah,
I think offensively, yeah, they're pretty good. They had Encarnacion that year, who I think was that was the 1 year he was good with the Guardians, right? Like after that, he kind of tanked.
Yeah, I think he was traded midway through 2018 or something like that. Yeah, that was his one full season.
Yeah, but I've been annoyed with the way Terry Francona rests people and platoons people, but I'm starting to get like a feeling there's something very particular they're doing with that. Like it's almost they're doing NBA's load management kind of thing. Like I don't know if any other team is doing it as methodical as they are, because I don't think there's any reason, like any traditional baseball reason, that Andrés Giménez has to get so many rest days. I think they have something like they're just following to.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back and look, like map each player and how long they've played before they get a break and try to find like what they're doing somewhere. It just feels like something calculated somewhere is doing their best to manage the players so they're at their fullest. Probably in October is the goal to.
Yeah.
Because, like, they have Tyler Freeman up, who they haven't demoted or anything, but he's barely had playing time. But also he plays at third base quite a bit now, and Jose Ramirez shifts over to DH. Like, I wonder if there's just a calculated thing they're doing, and that would – and getting rid of Franmil Reyes, that would kind of make that more sense, that they want that open DH spot, which they've, again, we talked about it last week. They seem to be happy they have that spot to do this
half day
movement with now. Yeah. So if they have all these guys who are, you got a couple stars in Ramirez and Jimenez, and also anybody who can fill in anywhere. This is like if Chris Antonetti had his, what is that glove that Thanos has called? The Infinity Gauntlet. He's dropped in all his pieces. He's got the maximum flexibility now that he's always wanted. And he can snap his fingers and just put anybody in anywhere. And like, this is the culmination of what the Guardians have been trying to draft and do for, is just not having a lineup of pure stars, but just the depth all day is I think what they've been going for. And it's in recent years, it's kind of been the opposite. They had like Lindor and Ramirez and then just black holes everywhere. And now it's just like, there's maybe a black hole at catcher. Once in a while, there's a black hole at center field, but then you just swap somebody else out who can hit pretty well. And it kind of works. And I guess the downside of all this is they're all young. So if they all start to play like they're young at the same time, it's going to be a miserable stretch, which we've seen earlier this year. It just depends when it'll hit again. But Yeah, it all just kind of adds up to just a really fun team. And if it's not Jose Ramirez carrying the team, it'll be Andres Jimenez one day. It'll be Stephen Kwan hitting a game for a week straight.
Or whatever,
yeah. Yeah, Ahmed Rosario going off. Like, they just have so many guys who can go off randomly. Josh Naylor could do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, there's just so many guys who can hit at one point, and it doesn't have to be just Jose Ramirez, which I think is good for him and good for everybody else. And maybe if he starts to feel it a little more, he won't feel like he has to press as much, which I think is kind of the goal of just what you want him to be in October, so he doesn't feel like he's trying to do everything and swinging at everything he shouldn't be and popping everything up, and he can have a good postseason again.
And to your point or two about that versatility, it's like, you look. I think the game two of Monday's doubleheader is a perfect example of this. Like, the guy playing center field is Will Benson, which, you know, I just, like, he's not what you imagine when you think of a center fielder, but he's also decent at it because he's athletic, and so is Kwan, and so is he playing right field today. So is Oscar Gonzalez. He is way faster than you think. I think it's just because he has long ass legs, but. Yeah, they just have this athletic flexibility. It's not like, it's not just platoon flexibility. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just like, this guy can hit righty, this guy can hit lefty. It's this guy can go and get it okay. Or, you know, this guy can spell this guy. And so not having two big plotting guys out there, really having that DH spot, really, it's, you know, they've realized the use for it, basically. But
yeah, we've always seen like one or two guys like this, and it's worked with mild success, but now they have a whole team of guys. Like, this is just the ultimate goal of what they've been building towards. Just everybody can swap in and out, and nobody is
honestly like. I think Jose Ramirez is the absolute like 100th percentile level like a type of guy they want to have, or even Jimenez probably, where he just does everything really well. Like, he steals bases, he hits for power, he hits for average. He's athletic. He plays the field well. Like, obviously, that's otherwise known as a superstar. But like, it's just like it's like having a whole bunch of Shinsu chews, that sort of thing too, right? Like, he doesn't do any one thing really well, but he does everything well, and I feel like that's what they're kind of they've kind of put together here over the last 6 or 7 years of drafting and production and stuff like that. And
it's so good. And you just sort of mentioned base stealing, but he is so good at just, I don't. He's fast, but he's not like the fastest player out there, but he is so good at reading a pitcher.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never seen somebody that's consistently such good jumps as he does. I don't know what it is.
Just all the time. Like, just
so good.
It's one of those things that's utterly unteachable. It's not unteachable, but it's like, it's a weird like experience and also just kind of instinct that like, you just know how the game works. And like, it's where great managers come from, but also it's just where great players come from. Like, it's why sometimes like, it'll be like Albert Pujols' numbers. And like, back in the day, he'd have seasons where he'd have like 10 steals. And it's like, him? And it's just because like, he knew what he could get away with effectively. And like, it wasn't like he's going to go out and try and steal 50 bases. But, you know, let's see.
But he can read a game and know when it's a good time to go. And
yeah, like in 2005, Pujols had 16 steals and 2 caught stealing. Like, 2009, same thing, 16 and 4. 2010, same thing, 14 and 4. Like, reading the game, just understanding like, this guy is doing this. I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going to grab a base because it'll help the team win a little bit more. And it's just like I was saying before, all that around the margins kind of a stuff, like, it really helps a team over those 162. That doesn't, you know, it doesn't show up quite as well in the postseason, but, you know, that's when the stars have to shine, and Cleveland is starting to collect a few stars, you know. I mean, even someone like Kwan, like you said, he could have a 3-for-4. 4-for-5 night, or, you know, a time where he gets on base 5 times and scores 3 runs. Like,
God, we're gonna have him better lead off for the next decade. That's gonna be so awesome.
I agree with that. One worry is, and I think about this all the time, is I love Stephen Kwan. I think he's very good, but I keep on hearing about all these prospects, and it's like, but what if them is like really good?
And he blocks him, and then
he blocks him and get rid of him, and he goes somewhere else and becomes an all-star. And I'm like, no. So, like, I think about this all the time, like, whether it's Arias or Brennan or
Freeman. He's already up, and that could happen.
Freeman or Valera or any of these guys who was just like, we don't have room for him, so we can't play him. Or Oscar Gonzalez, another good example. Like, what if he hits 300 over the next 2 years, but he never walks more than like 6% of the time? You're like, oh, gee. And then they don't have room for, you know, Nolan Jones is sent away or whatever. So it's like too much of a good thing, I guess. And obviously it's a stupid thing to worry about, but
It's a good problem to have until it backfires. Then it's
exactly like, until you have a guy who's pretty, you know, you've got, he was like a 115, 120 WRC plus guy, and then like, well, we can't fit him, so we'll get rid of him. He goes and he's just like an MVP.
Yu Chang, I think he's probably not great again now, but he was looking good with the Rays there for a little bit. It's every good player who goes to the Rays is, they find the same exact play. Yeah, he's bad again, but is he? No, he's still really good with the Rays. What the hell?
It's got to be a bad 20
WRC plus in 19 games with the Rays.
I'm not going to worry too much about that one.
Yeah, it's he's one of the ones where like, he got a chance that didn't work out. I'd be happy for him, but
he got a million chances. Like,
yeah,
he got his luck, and we moved on. You know, if he does well elsewhere, fine. I don't care.
Yeah, good for him. I'm happy. Like, I like watching Yu Chang be good. That's fun for me. Yeah, that'll do it for us this week. If you haven't already, subscribe to us on Covering the Corner, coveringthecorner.com. Find us on Twitter at Cover the Corner, on Facebook. I am Matt, RLY on Twitter. Merritt is at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. Merritt, talk to you next week. Well, no,
I'll be there.
2 weeks. You won't be there next week, 2 weeks.
I will be there. Back to home runs. I'll see you next week.
See ya.